latest in college esports from the students that play.
Go behind the scenes at the school's that game.
The only place where esports are
on campus.
Hello and welcome to Checkpoint XP on Campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. I'm your host, Dan, and unfortunately, Norris is experiencing a litany of technical issues, so we hope to carry on the show in his stead. And joining me, as always, is the always fetch, Jacob.
Hey, how are you?
And guys, we got a treat for you today. We have the president of MSU Esports, Josh, aka MedC, here to talk to us about Valorant and, you know, the rising esports scene of that game. Thank you for joining us, Josh.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks much for being here. So we have some good old Valorant. So where should we start with that? You know, because college is kind of growing at the same time as normal esports for this game, since it's all up in the air right now, and that's kind of a unique stand, I would say. So when everyone's kind of like, I don't really know how to build this, what has your experience been with that, especially for a college?
So, I mean, it kind of, the way that our team kind of got pushed together is because originally we hold tryouts in the fall semester whenever new incoming freshmen come or transfer students. And that's usually where we govern tryouts. But since, you know, tournaments are being put on for the game, even though it's in beta still, we realized we needed to form a team. And so I decided to compose a team of the best players on our Counter-Strike team and our Overwatch team, because the game's kind of like a mesh of the two. You have your aim style that's very traditional CS 1.6, more so than Go. Mm-hmm. So having aimers that can play in that that style is very important. Then also having people understand like the ultimate usage and everything, as well as being able to play a DPS game, also kind of benefits the team. So I kind of had the idea of meshing the two together. So we took three of our Overwatch players, and then two CSGO players, and a sub that's also a CSGO player for the team. And we're actually going to be competing in the Ambox Collegiate Tournament that is this week.
Oh, and are any of those players from the Overwatch Clash team?
Yes, actually, we have Flonson, Matthew Flonson. He is a DPS player on the Overwatch team. We have Jacob Cobb 23. He is also a DPS player on the team. And then we have Ecology, who is our off-tank player, Sigma God, that's also on the team.
So, and you yourself, you're on the team also, right?
I'm not on the Overwatch team. I'm on the CSGO team, or I was on the CSGO team before I stepped down whenever I became president, so I could balance my academics and the president.
And you don't play on the Valorant team either? Or
I do play on the Valorant team. Yeah.
Okay.
I chose to come out of retirement.
You're the perfect guy to talk to, because like when this game was coming out, everyone was joking like, oh, you know, just some Counter-Strike players will just roll over and some Overwatch players will just roll over, and it appears like that's actually happening. So what has that fusion been like? Because those are two very different games.
Most definitely, yeah. They're completely different. So whenever I saw the original trailer for Valorant, I could see like similarities with CS, but the movement still didn't look the same. But when I actually played it, it felt a lot like 1.6, which was, for the young viewers, it was forever ago. Counter-Strike Go has been in the scene for a long time. But yeah, it feels a lot like CSGO, but having the like team play that Overwatch has is like very unique, and compared to like other games, I feel like League of Legends is like the only other game I think can like grasp the same type of having ultimate abilities, team comps that you know, balance off with each other, and also team fights and engagements that work well. And I feel like that was like the big reasoning for picking up the Overwatch players to put on the team, is because they understand that, and so they can teach the CS players that don't really understand that big mindset. And we can teach them how to position themselves and how to aim better and how to engage in fights better. So that was like the main reason with that, because I feel like Valorant takes those two aspects and mesh them into like one game.
Well, who do you think has had to do more training, really, for this game? The Overwatch players or the Counter-Strike players?
I would say more so the Overwatch players, just because not being able to run and shoot. Overwatch is a complete difference. Even though in this game, your first shot accuracy is actually not as detrimental as it is in CS. So you can be moving a little bit whenever you shoot your first bullet, and it still will be somewhat accurate compared to CS, where if you're moving at all when you're shooting, it's completely random. You might get a lucky headshot, or you might, you know, shoot someone, but for the most part, you're not going to shoot. So yeah, Overwatch players have had to adapt a little bit more.
Yeah. And then when looking at the tournament scene, Were you watching a lot of like the Twitch tournaments that were going on? Because there was a big Twitch Rivals one. Like, were you watching those and like seeing what they were doing organization wise or anything like that?
Yes, most definitely. I've been watching a lot of the Twitch Rivals, the 100 Thieves tournament that got put on, the Cash App Code Green tournament, all those tournaments, specifically watching Brax. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with Brax. He was a CSGO player that got banned for match fixing during the team iBuyPower. And he's been banned for CSGO professionally. So whenever he heard about Valorant coming out, he wanted to jump into the scene and, you know, go professional in this game since he couldn't really do that in CS. So he joined T1 and he's been putting a lot of hours and time into this game, and he's brought a lot of other CSGO professionals that have either retired or got banned or whatever the fact into this game to like play and compete, and they've been dominating the scene. They've won almost every tournament. Their play style is very, you know, unique because it caters to the CSGO play style, but you can see them adapting to the ultimate abilities and, you know, the usage of their specialist abilities and things like that.
Okay, here's kind of a speculation question that I think is kind of interesting. So, I don't know if you saw, but Riot already said that they're not going to be, like, hard pushing the esport right out the gate. And so, that's going to lead to a lot of more grassroots, kind of like Overwatch Clash kind of tournaments, where it's just all kind of independently organized. So, do you think it's going to kind of go like how the Overwatch League did, where it was just, like, small organized tournaments, and then Blizzard was like, here is our LCS, you know, more or less. And so do you think it's going to take like kind of that approach, or do you think it's going to kind of stay more Counter-Strike where it's kind of, that's still Wild West kind of esport?
So they put out the memo that you are talking about, saying that they're wanting to keep it like very natural and grow on its own, kind of like Counter-Strike. But knowing Riot and knowing what they've done with League of Legends, I don't see them staying far away for much longer. So I give them like a year, maybe two, before they actually like try to develop or like formulate their LCS of the Valorant scene.
And you know, now that we Valorant is a new game, obviously it hasn't even really officially launched yet. How exciting is it to be like on the forefront of like growing this esports scene from the very, you know, from the very beginning, you know? And you know, you guys have this opportunity to kind of like set the tone for the college scene also. So what's that been like?
It's actually really refreshing because there's not, at least it doesn't feel like in the esports scene, you get a big chance to like jump on a game that has a lot of backing from a developer and a fan base and try to do something within that game. Especially for a lot of people that have played Counter-Strike over the years that haven't been able to develop into the professional scene because it's like very old school heavy. So you have a lot of players that have been competing in the game for 15 plus years that are just so knowledgeable, you can't compete with them. You might be able to compete on the like mechanically, but when it comes to a 5v5 team play style, you can't compete with them. So having a new game come out that is, you know, has a different turn to it for these players that have not been able to like quite reach the professional level in either CS or Overwatch, can come in and kind of like give it their best try to go in and compete professionally. And also it's refreshing for a collegiate organization to have a new game to come in that they can build and manage their team to be the best in that game. So they can have the best school competing for them.
So speaking of setting the scene, unless you have any more questions about Valorant, Daniel, you guys been setting the scene more or less in the Collegiate Clash. Right now, the Mississippi team is ranked third. So still looking good for that kind of confusing, but also kind of straightforward playoff bracket thing that's going to be at the end that where we keep the score ourselves because we haven't seen the scores online. But so what are your thoughts on Mississippi and how they've been doing in the tournament?
So we started off really well. First week we came in second place. We went into the finals against Utah. Obviously they 3-0'd us, I believe, but we honestly put up a good fight knowing, because when we went in there, we went to the tournament saying we can beat everybody in this tournament. Utah's going to be the one giving us problems. And I feel like most teams probably thought that in their head, and they were completely right. Utah is dominated. But we really felt like we could do better than what we did. And we've had other tournaments that we've been playing in as well. And I feel like we've done a good job. We're third place, obviously, but I feel like we're still a second place worthy team. I feel like we've played against UNLV and we've done decently, but we haven't given it our all. Like, we definitely are a team that can beat them and beat them consistently. And they're a team that can beat us consistently. And we just haven't pushed past that edge to complete that and do that yet.
What do you think that it takes to get the team over the hump? Like, is there any like objective, like we need to stick together more, or we need to position better, or is there any like finite thing?
Yeah, so our coach would probably be able to give you a better explanation than I can, but I think knowing the players personally and just talking to them on a consistent basis, I think really it comes to them not getting burnt out mid-game. So we're a team that's based on our emotions, which can be very positive and very negative at the same time. If we're winning and we're doing well, we're dominating everybody. If not, then we lose. So it really is, it's based on the emotions that are going on our team and making sure everybody's hyped up and energized whenever they're playing.
Well, we look really, looking forward to see what you guys do in the Collegiate Clash and what you guys bring to the Valorant scene. But unfortunately, that's going to be all the time we have today. So thank you once again, MedC, for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you again.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Have a great one.
All right, well then finally what I'd like to do is also get your initial thoughts on Echo so far. I know she's only in PTR, and she might go through a few more changes before she hits live, but what are some of your initial impressions?
So when I first saw her, I had basically two impressions. It was she's busted as hell, and she's going to make the game better in a way, because her kit is just absolutely insane. Like, she has insane movement, which I think it's been nerfed a little on PTR, but I'm not sure how much more it'll get nerfed. I think when she releases for Al, she's going to be very heavily played. But I also think it's interesting because you look at her kit and it's just the movement and she just has so much in it. But then you look at a hero like McCree that's been around since the beginning of the game, and he has like a roll and a flashbang. Like, there's really not much there.
Knocked one.
Popping. Scooting up. Knocked another.
Popping a bat.
They're so weak. Gibraltar's so hurt.
Kind of self-hurting.
Let's f***ing go, man. We had the worst position and still won the game.
Sonny's on. Keep his knees dead. Hit for 152.
Yes! Let's go!
That was my intense.
He's dropping to the right.
It's solo.
Bro, gotta push him together. He's in it! Bro,
let's go! Bro!
Hell yeah, bro!
Let's go, boy!
And welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus. It is now time to talk about Collegiate Clash. And we're here again with the multiverse brain, Jacob. Jacob, is Utah still dominant?
A crisis of infinite brains, you could say. But the answer to your question is yes, Utah is still definitely very dominant. And we'll just do, you know, our usual, we'll just do our drive-by score lines.
Let's get those rankings up there.
Let's get them rankings. So Utah, first place with 32. UNLV, 24. Mississippi, 18. CU Boulder, 18. University of Texas at Dallas. We will be talking about them. 12. Texas A&M, 12. Wichita State, 12. Boise State, 8. Oklahoma, 6. George Mason University, who I think is no longer in the tournament, 4. And then University of Akron had their opening week. And
they when you have a 4-week bye week, I think you're out.
Well, no, what it was that when the casters were talking about the bracket before matches started, they said, oh, yeah, Boise State and Oklahoma are not playing this week, and they just didn't even mention George Mason. So I'm pretty confident that they're just not in there anymore. But I also wrote down some storylines, you know, some notable points. UNLV was swept by Dallas in the first round, which is saying something. They went to game 6 in their final when they played. So it's a lot to watch. CU Boulder beat Mississippi in the first round. Akron made it to the second round in their debut. Utah just, you know, continues to roll. But this was the first time that UTD, which is Dallas, and Utah played each other in a final. So it was the first time they played each other. Because it's kind of what we've all been thinking is that the only teams that could take them down is Mississippi, Dallas, or UNLV. And we've seen how it goes against UNLV more than once. And so it was good to see Dallas take their crack at it.
And so what was banned this week, Jacob?
What was banned this week? So the four champs that were champs heroes, there's too many words, that were banned this week is Widowmaker, McCree, Reinhardt, and Brigitte. Which
the Reinhardt was an interesting
Reinhardt's the one that stands out to me. You know, it's crazy that Dunmere didn't have Reinhardt, and he wasn't able to carry the team further, you know, as he likes to charge off the face of the earth. But God bless him. But yeah, no, the Reinhardt's definitely the most interesting out of that list since he's kind of the core of a team. It's either, you know, a Reinhardt team or like an Orisa team, you know. Those are kind of the two anchors you look for. So, going into the final, where Dallas finally played Utah, it was a lot of the same. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on who you root for.
What was the same exactly?
The same was Utah just rolling, man. You know, they're like a Limp Bizkit song and they just keep on rolling. And they did have one good game, which was game one against at Lijiang Tower, where the first round went their way and then the other rounds did not. But this match did play down to the wire. And one thing I will say about Dallas is that their DPS line is definitely second in the league. Like, it definitely goes Utah's DPS line, and then a very close second is Dallas's DPS line.
What kind of sets them above something like, you know, Kevin Durant?
They don't have to rely on just one player, you know? Because for UNLV, their Wild Wing Bat, he's primarily really good at pressing his ultimate key. And, like, he's good at positioning, he's good at fighting, but he's not this consistent force. While Stasis, the DPS player for Dallas, he won 2v1s as Reaper consistently, just because he was really good with that character on top of ultimates. And Hello, which is the other DPS player for Dallas, he also just crushes it, and he's also a great Doom. So when you put these two together, they just pop off. But then as we went to Game 2 and Game 3... that just didn't keep up. And a lot of it was Utah just had better positioning. They knew when to take the high ground. They knew when to not take the high ground. When they played defense, they just, on Blizzard World, they were just at the point on the high ground. And they're like, what if we just kill you? What if we just don't let you get to the point? And even when they did finally get the point by just saving their ultimates, just they couldn't even get it. They pushed it maybe a couple yards or meters. Because Utah was on the high ground and they stayed there. And it was a very dramatic contrast because when Dallas played, they would have some on the high ground and some on the low ground. Dallas liked to play very separated. And that's what hurt them. Most people were playing Mercy. And so when you have these teams just split apart like this, Mercy can only fly around so fast. Even a Lucio can only jump around so fast, you know? So a lot of what UTD... like, if you're going to look at the question of, like, how could UTD win? Because I think UTD could beat Utah. I do actually believe that. Hmm. And it's mostly just sticking together, you know? And what happened...
And they didn't do those last two rounds.
Well, no, especially in Game 3. Because by the time they got to Game 3, they were just scared. Like, you could tell that they were afraid to take any engagement because they thought they were outmatched. Koblart just, you know, flipped the switch. He looked at everyone and everyone died. But you could tell even when... on the push, UTD, they just had one man pushing the cart, which is the slowest you can go. They invested all this time in everyone going into the high ground, and as soon as they took damage, they just disengaged the high ground. And so, what their idea was good, you know, take the high ground, because that's the most advantageous position, but as soon as damage came through, they were like, well, we can't win this. We gotta get out. They're better than us. And then that's when Utah really went to roll.
They smelled blood, basically, and just went.
They absolutely smelled the blood. So if UTD were to win, what they need to do is that they need to stay together, because you can't just all be separated. And you need to... Sometimes you can win a fight when you lose a man. Usually not, but sometimes you can, and sometimes you just have to bite that bullet and be like, we'll have time to all respawn together. We need to take this engagement, because UTD is really good at engagements. And so Utah rolled through. It was another flawless week. And Cool ABC is an absolute unit, and Koblart is an absolute unit. God bless them. You have any other questions for?
Well, again, 5 weeks down, we are like nearing the finish line of the Collegiate Clash. Out of the, you know, you mentioned Mississippi, UNLV, UTD. Who's the chosen one? Who is the chosen one to take down the big bad final boss?
It really will, if the big bad boss can go down. It would either be UNLV or Dallas for sure. UNLV needs to clean up their aggression issues. They need to learn to not lean on one guy. And UTD just needs to play together. As for who could probably get their act together, it's probably Dallas. Because when you're a team that's in a situation of relying on only one player, there's not really a fix to that. You're just always going to rely on that one player, as good as that player is. While Dallas, they're all great. They're all phenomenal players. And they just need to play together and probably clean up some shot calling. But beyond that...
I mean, there's a reason why this is a team sport. Well, that's going to be all the time for the Collegiate Clash this week. When we get back, we're going to be talking about the changes of esports betting, because we got some big news all our hometown of Las Vegas. And we're going to be joined by our fellow degenerate, Kevin Kelly, to talk about what's been added to the list.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Hey, what's up? It's Weird Beard from Checkpoint XP, and this is your CSL flashback. We're flashing it back to the near past for the 2019-2020 regional qualifiers for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, where Rush takes on AIM-D with his Meta Knight versus Fox.
You can't really challenge Wolf Up B as Meta Knight.
No! As soon as you said that,
there we go. All right,
you cursed him.
I did.
You cursed him.
I did.
He didn't even hit him. He windboxed him.
That's pretty entertaining.
That's
okay.
Well, welcome back to Checkpoint XP on Campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. And guys, we have some big news in our town of Las Vegas, because the Nevada Gaming Control Board has approved wagering on not just CSGO. We now have LCS, LEC, Overwatch League, and the Call of Duty League up for betting. And to talk about that, we brought the utter degenerate. When they're not talking about, when they're not arguing about Star Wars, we got Kevin Kelly here to talk about that stuff.
We're off that. No more Star Wars talk. The world has progressed past the need
Ignore
for Star
Jacob
Wars.
Shirt, apparently, then. So what are you guys' thoughts on, you know, this huge development?
It's funny, because this was like more of a story like 2 months ago when they when gambling companies outside of Las Vegas and Nevada approved all of this stuff and started setting odds and whatnot for I believe it was the LCS and the Overwatch League. But since Vegas is like, well, the gaming control board, they control most of the stuff that goes on here in Vegas. they're the old money, they're old guard. So it's not legit really until the gaming control board here in Nevada, you know, makes a ruling on it. So for them to kind of just cascade avalanche all at once, that's pretty huge. Just being like, okay, we kind of know the deal with all of these. We know how we can kind of like, you know, regulate them parallel to traditional sports. And now we're just like, we're in the Wild West now, as far as just like, you know, a whole new kind of meta as far as gambling and set that up.
Yeah, I consider this story to genuinely just be huge, because one of the biggest stories, or one of the biggest problems that CEOs are talking about, you know, in their meetings, is how do we get young people into our casinos? That's like their top concern. And so, like, I already placed a bet on the Call of Duty League as soon as I heard the story go through.
You want to share that one?
It's Seattle. Seattle
no
beat
free
the
picks.
Gorillas.
No free picks. You got to pay for that.
That's right. The big brain, right? No, but the kind of, because like the bottom line is that you can now bet on the third largest sport in North America. Like, that's LCS, crazy. Yeah. LCS. And you can now bet on like European wings of those sports too, which has always been interesting. So it's really cool to like just drop five new sports for people to bet on right now, when everyone, like when casinos are like, how can we make money right now?
You think with current conditions as they are now, this is going to bring a lot more new viewers to this, because, well, you know, part of the reasons why sports is so popular is because people like to bet on it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
This is how you can bring in like 40-year-olds into esports, really. If you tell like, you know, a 40-year-old, like, you can bet on this, they'll watch.
Yeah, like, if you have skin in the game, it immediately makes whatever you're watching, like, infinitely more interesting.
Like, people bet on horses, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not a stretch.
But just all of it at once is just, like, you know, alternate streams of revenue are going to be, like, more towards, like, you know, help your path towards legitimization and the fact that all of this is like, oh, you can all gamble on this stuff now, which is kind of like one of the hallmarks for, is it a legitimate sport for a lot of people, especially degenerate gamblers. They don't consider it a real sport if you can't bet on it. even stuff like, you know, you seeing everyone trying to adapt during these, you know, these lockdown times and stuff like that. Like with NASCAR, you can even bet on iRacing NASCAR like sims on streams and stuff like that. Like a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, we talked to William Byron, who's like out there winning those races, and just seeing like this was kind of just everything was kind of progressing towards this. So whether or not we had a pandemic affect this or not, it always seemed like we were kind of on this track to like at some point they're going to have to legitimize esports to the point where people are going to want to make more and more money off of it.
Well, Kevin, are you going to gamble on any of this?
I'm probably going to bet on COD League. COD League is kind of like, it feels like basketball as far as just like the stats can tell you a lot about, how a team plays and how good they are and whatnot. And so I feel like betting props on COD, betting, on series and stuff like that, that's going to be really fun because
it makes it fun. That beat
every now and then. Last question from me, gentlemen. And, obviously we have such a big influx of games being able to bet on. Let's bring it back to the collegiate scene here. Now that we have these major leagues being open for gambling, do you see any college events being able to put through the same thing that we can bet on, like college esports? Do you see that happening?
You're definitely not going to see them partner with schools. I do think for the protection of students and stuff like that, student athletes in this scenario, you're going to have to see some kind of like committee or board formed.
Yes.
Akin to the NCAA to try and figure out navigate what's okay, what's not okay, how far is too far as outside involvement, especially from these gaming, like betting corporations. And so definitely like it's almost an inevitability that this seeps in.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd start seeing like more and more college stuff being able to be bet on.
But do you see a risk of like corruption there? Because college sports already has like a big kind of reputation of like point shaving and history of that. I just kind of fear like esports, seeing as how it is what it is, it has more risk of that.
Well, in this situation, there's a lot of dislike, right? Like the reason why the board allows gambling on college traditional sports is because of the NCAA. And they're okay with that because the NCAA doesn't pay their players. Now, in esports, players are getting money from these tournaments, which is reason number one, two, and three why the NCAA does not want to latch on to esports. So without the NCAA being there, it's probably not going to happen. So,
yeah, and as far as like, whatever wrongs the NCAA is guilty of in any case, they still provide a whole lot of infrastructure for college for college athletics and
the organizers.
Esports, as far as on a collegiate level, they don't have nearly as much of that infrastructure and support. So I feel like gambling wise, they're going to be a lot more susceptible to stuff like that. And I think that's one thing that they're going to really have to figure out before we can kind of comfortably, feel safe about, these kinds of transactions.
Well, it's going to be an exciting time to watch to see what happens. But unfortunately, guys, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Checkpoint XP on Campus. I'd like to thank Norris and the crew at our Detroit offices for doing what they do. I want to give a shout out to Jacob and Kevin for joining us today. And we hope and we demand to hear from you guys. And we hope to see you on the next episode of Checkpoint XP on Campus. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
I love you.
Hey everybody, my name is Ethan Schneider, producer here on the show Checkpoint XP on Campus. Right now, I'm going to give you a quick room tour, because I know we've all been locked up and you probably saw rooms from the other hosts, but right now, I'm going to check out my crib. Let's check it out.
So to kick off this room tour, I really just want to go over what's on my shelf over here. And as you guys know, these are all Godzilla figurines, and little known fact about me, I am a huge Godzilla fan. I have been one since I was a kid. I love all the movies, and I've collected all of these over the years growing up. Right over here on the right is Kiryu from Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, and next to him is Godzilla, or Mechagodzilla from Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, Godzilla 1968, the little dopey cookie monster looking one. Love him. And next to him is Mechagodzilla, or not Mechagodzilla, Mechaking Ghidorah. He was built off of the original Mechagodzilla, this Mechagodzilla 2 over here. And through some future time travel magic, it's Mechaking Ghidorah. Then we have regular King Ghidorah, and as mentioned before, Mechagodzilla, or known colloquially as Mechagodzilla 2. And then of course here I have my two 3DSs and my DS Lite. All really cool. And then below here, got some really cool games. Got my Wii over here, and also a bottle of Clorox right there to keep everything clean. Over on the left here, we have my HD TV. And this is not one of those newer models. This is around early 2010s. And I mainly use it just for playing some of my old consoles. And moving right along next to that is my Wii U. And really haven't played it since it came out. I always thought it was a really cool console, but now I have the Switch, so I have this. But I think it's pretty cool. And also I have my SNES Mini and just play some SNES games. And honestly, on this shelf is where I think all my favorite things in my room are. And starting with the top, have my MK9 bookends. And over here in between them are my Genesis and Nintendo. I got my Nintendo and Genesis both like different times, different points in my life. But really, they're just really fun systems, and I'm glad I own both of them. One thing that I'm like happy that I have, and that is my retro game collection here. And down the line, behind all the other games up front, goes NES, SNES, N64, and GameCube. Believe me, there are a ton more games. I just can't fit everything on this shelf. But this is where I think most of my important games are, and some of my favorites. And up front here, all the games on this line are some of my personal favorites. And yes, Superman 64 is there. And yes, I said all these are my favorites. It's my favorite because I get to own Superman 64. And honestly, it's not that bad of a game. Played a little bit of it. And then also my Batman Arkham City poster. I got this when I pre-ordered the game. And honestly, top 10, top 5 favorite games. Really good. And then this Nathan Drake poster. But then also I have this poster. And really, I don't know who it's supposed to be. It's like Avengers or something. I think over there is Thanos. Yeah, it's really cool. Oh, there's Captain America right there. Yeah, it's a cool poster, and yeah, really cool Avengers poster, and I'd like to thank you all for watching my room tour. This has been Ethan Schneider for Checkpoint XP on Campus, and I hope you all have a nice day. Thanos.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.